Focus with Cassie McCullough on ABC Radio Sydney.
Now, coming up, we're going to be asking the question, is it time to reset the jobs versus the environment thinking that we appear to have fallen into? Jeff Angel from the Total Environment Centre is joining us in just a tick. Okay, here's an interesting thought exercise. What if we treated our mountains of household recycling in the same way that we've traditionally treated coal, that is, as a resource to be exploited and extract value from? Until January last year, we thought of recycling as a problem that we could simply export, like coal. But then China stopped accepting our recycling, and the search for new solutions is now critical. Finding new and innovative and, above all, profitable ways to deal with megatons of recycling that's produced daily in this country, well, it could answer not only the prayers of councils and local governments around the nation, but also generate employment as well. Well, Jeff Angel says that there are major opportunities like this going begging simply because we're stuck in the mindset of jobs versus the environment, when in fact the opposite might be true. Maybe you think that this is just a load of greeny tosh. Well, maybe you think there's some merit in it. I'd be interested to know what you think. 1300 222 702. Let's hear what Jeff Angel's argument is. He's the director of the Total Environment Centre. Jeff, g'day.
G'day.
Good to have you here. Now, your logic is based on some data released with very little fanfare earlier this year by the New South Wales Innovation and Productivity Commission. What did you find?
The central conclusion of their research was only released in February this year, was that when you protect the environment, you do not destroy the economy. In fact, you create jobs and economic activity. And because there is increasing environmental concern and government responses, such as creating mandated renewable energy targets, energy efficiency markets, recycling requirements, you actually create lots and lots of jobs and you create lots of economic activity. And the report actually found that the growth in that sort of environmental services economy is growing at 6% a year, which is four times more than the state's average employment growth. So there is no jobs versus environment polarised conflict. It's in fact an economy in transition. It's not going backwards, it's going forwards, and we're getting some great environmental outcomes.
Give us some examples of that.
The report by the Innovation and Productivity Council went through a whole range of what they call environmental services, things such as installing and building renewable energy, solar and wind. Solar, not only do you have to produce the actual equipment, you have to install it and maintain it. That involves lots of jobs. Recycling clearly involves lots of jobs. In fact, for every 10,000 tonnes of waste, you get 10 times more jobs than if you dumped it in landfill. Energy efficient lighting, soil and landscape rehabilitation. You know, you've got to employ people to put the trees in the ground, to grow them, to find the seeds, to generate the seedlings. All of these things create an enormous amount of jobs, particularly in regional areas.
But jobs, certainly, but not necessarily profit. Who is paying for these? Are these not taxpayer-funded initiatives that are legislated for by governments?
No, they're not taxpayer-funded. They are government regulations. So the government intervenes in the market and says, in the case of the renewable energy target, the electricity industry is going to buy a certain amount of renewable energy. That creates the market demand and the investment and the economic and job activity. In the case of recycling, we could actually have recycled content rules for packaging and other products. That means we would treat, instead of trying to export it to Asia, all of our curbside recycling and create new products. All involves economic activity and employment. Now, that doesn't involve taxpayer-funded programs, because government regulation, pass a law, etc., implement it. but it can involve higher costs initially as those markets generate and get to a certain scale.
But unless they're worn by the consumer, they're having to be met by the manufacturer if it's going to be a back down the chain responsibility, or by companies who are then having to look for the technologies to learn how to extract value from recycling.
Well, that's true, but how did our current economy get created? You know, consumers said they wanted certain things. We all invested it. The investment market, and it's mainly the private investment, was directed into creating that level of economic activity. Government regulation to protect the environment is similarly directing private investment into new products. But the important point is, of course, we're not destroying the environment by consuming and producing some of those old dinosaur type products. We're actually getting an extra gain, an extra massive benefit for present and future generations of a much cleaner, healthier environment.
It's very hard, as you well know, to argue for an outcome which means there's an absence of something, an absence of pollution or an absence of destruction of an environment. And what you're talking about are politically unpalatable laws. Have great innovative changes come from the introduction and the imposition of demands, whether or not they're popular with the public?
I've got to say, we don't win environmental battles unless we have proven we have massive community support. And I'll give you an example of the Return and Earn scheme that was introduced about 18 months ago in New South Wales. Enormous opposition from the beverage industry. Conservative economists all saying it's going to cost too much, it's going to cause job losses in the beverage industry, the price of beverages will go up 20 cents or whatever. 18 months later, after we introduced the scheme, we have created over 500 jobs, several hundred million dollars of investment. The price of drinks has hardly changed, and we have a far less littered environment. In fact, 57% less beverage container litter in New South Wales than before the scheme.
So these things are... Is there no operating losses in that scheme?
No, they're still producing the same amount of drinks. There is a transitional exercise that people have to do to get adjusted to the new system and collect their 10-cent refund. That does require a tiny amount of extra effort. Not everyone is bothering doing it. But the fact is that we have created new industry that will go on and on and on. And they're the important results of an environmental decision that was initially unpopular in government political circles. And I've got to say, one of the things that harks back to this jobs versus environment debate is that the opponents of these environmental programs try to create fear. And they do that for political and ideological purposes, because the container deposit scheme wasn't some new thing brought into New South Wales first time on the planet. There were over 40 such schemes already operating, including in Australia. So it wasn't like it was a scary thing. But for political strategic reasons, the opposition creates fear and they say there will be jobs lost. Well, they were wrong.
We're talking here with Jeff Angel from the Total Environment Centre. Is fear the real enemy of this kind of modal change towards environmental practice being enshrined in law? Or is apathy actually part of the issue? Do you feel that the citizenry is sort of overloaded with messages that are negative about the kind of, you know, diminishing returns on environmental effort? Do you think that apathy and a sense of despair is actually really the big challenge?
Yeah, I do think we have to be careful about instilling a sense of despair in people. And the latest global problem, of course, is plastic pollution in the oceans, an incredibly difficult thing to solve because once it's in the ocean, it stays there for hundreds of years.
And predictions that within a couple of decades, we will find plastic outnumbering aquatic life.
Now, you know, you can't really hide the facts, but I think that Australians and the environment movement are resilient enough and have learnt enough about when we protect the environment, we get enormous benefits, that they will actually support campaigns, and they did. They gave us great support during the container deposit system campaigns, and in fact we only now have one state in Australia that doesn't have this system, and that's Victoria. Tasmania just announced it last week. So, you know, I don't give up. The environment movement doesn't give up. We've been going for 50 to 60 years. All the evidence is that community support is growing.
I don't know about that. What about the federal election? I mean, there was very much a jobs versus the environment campaign running there, and it was successful.
I actually don't agree with that. I don't think that the election was solely on the jobs versus environment issue, and I don't think that
That's the kind of critique that's come out of Queensland, that it was jobs in the mining industry that were being under threat, and it was, in fact, environmental activism that some people have pointed the finger at. The Adani Crusade, or whatever, convoy, whatever it was called, crusade's a very loaded word, that went from the south up to Queensland was seen as actually detrimental to that argument.
And I don't dispute that. I think it was strategically the wrong thing to do in the hyper-emotional atmosphere of an election. But I think there are a whole range of reasons that Labor, with its more advanced environmental policies, lost the election. Certainly, there are issues of concern in the old-style industries such as coal mining and coal-fired power. And the important thing to do is to have a transition program that looks after people. And I would claim the environment movement is much more ethical when it comes to saying that industry must change. We did that with forestry. We actually said we want more forest in national parks. That means there's less timber for the timber industry. There will be some job losses. We want transition programs, and they were largely successful. The same has got
to happen. But again, in Tasmania, there were campaigns run on forestry in those seats, particularly in the northwest, that worked against the Labor Party.
That was one of the results. And I'm not denying that at a regional level, you can certainly create some pretty hysterical politics, particularly during an election. But there are other things like the taxes and the tax changes that Labor was promoting that spread that vote against Labor. And let's remember, it was a really close election. It's not like there was some massive tidal wave of support for the government's climate policies or for the industry's claims about jobs versus environment. It was a really close election. And I don't think anyone thinks that climate change is an issue that requires government response is going to disappear because we just had a federal election.
Okay, well, let's leave the election behind. I mean, we spent a lot of time in the lead up to it and a lot of time sorting through the entrails of it. So let's leave that for the moment. Let's go back to these figures from the New South Wales Innovation and Productivity Council. It found, actually, that the number of jobs being created in delivering services and goods in the energy management, biodiversity and landscape services was actually quite significant, surprisingly so, about up to 152,000 jobs. More, it said, than agriculture and mining combined.
Yep.
So why is that a difficult argument to sell?
Clearly, I don't think the information gets out broadly enough. I think people read headlines, particularly in regional areas, when the Greenies come to town with a proposal to protect something or to stop something. I can understand that there's a very strong instinctive reaction against that if you're in the industry that is being targeted. It is always hard to sell a transition proposal. I can say the environment movement is absolutely committed to ethical and justifiable transition programs, and we've done it before. But, you know, you don't find that in the mining or agricultural industry. If the owners of those mines or those farms want to introduce automation and sack people, they just do it. So they don't have a particular ethical compass when it comes to managing transition in their own industries.
But that's not necessarily an ethical question. That's just one of sheer economics. And
exactly. Economics doesn't have ethics. I would suggest the environment movement does have ethics, and that's why we talk about transition proposals. So why aren't people more frightened about the changes in the traditional industries brought about by the owners of those industries And for some reason in our society, we say it's okay to sack people to make an industry more efficient or automated. But it's not okay to change an industry in order to protect the environment, which will give benefits to everybody for hundreds of years. And that's a sort of fundamental conflict we have in society we're still trying to work through and try to justify. Unfortunately, the environment movement has to keep doing this to justify those environmental decisions.
What are the bright points for you? What do you see? I mean, you've pointed to solar energy and a few other things, but what are the bright points?
I wouldn't have stayed in the environmental campaign area for over 37 years if I didn't think there were bright points. Some might say I'm deluded, I'm just a deluded optimist. But you do find that as you go on over the decades, more and more people are on side and more people are willing to take those hard decisions. You do need the right conjunction of politics, community support, business acquiescence or business support, and that's certainly happening in the recycling industry. Years ago, we would fight them on landfilling. They wanted more dumps. Now they all say they want more recycling and they want more recycled content in packaging. Totally different from when we sat around the table some years ago. So people do change and it happens slowly. And that's the nature of change in our democratic societies and our economic system. And we know we just have to persist.
Well, I don't know whether you're a deluded optimist, Jeff Angel, but you do mount some compelling arguments. Thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.
Jeff Angel is the director of the Total Environment Centre, and his argument is that let's get rid of the jobs versus the environment narrative that we've adopted for so long and really start to think about how environmental services and goods, small business, medium and large, can be generating jobs and, of course, profit from making practices that are going to be beneficial for our environment.